Now we're holding on Tesvav Amud Beis, starting from the Mishnah, which now begins kind of a new topic. The beginning of the Masechta had dealt with a lot of, the Masechta is about the first two prakim of the Masechta, are all about the dinim of Shechita. But up until now, we had focused on who is and isn't allowed to Shecht. Things like if a person, the last Mishnah was if a person Shecht on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, is it considered a valid Shechita? Etc. Now we're going to start getting into the details of how shechita actually takes place. So the Mishnah says, "Hashechet b'mago yod." If a person shechts with a hand sickle, now Rashi explains that the sickle has two edges. One edge is smooth, and one edge is smooth, and the other edge is serrated. So you can't shecht with the serrated side, but you can shecht with the smooth side. As we'll see in the Gemara, the expression is hashoichet. If he shechted, then v'di'evet it's kosher. He shouldn't do it lachatchila, because after all, he might use the wrong side. But if he shechted using the smooth side, then it's fine. But sir, or with a sharp, with a sharp stone, or with a kone, or with a reed. All of those, shchitasik shera, it's all a valid shchita, because after all, it was done with something that has a smooth edge, and therefore it's kosher. Earlier the Gemara had mentioned five basic halachas of shchita, which we're going to go through as we go through these prakim, and one of them is called ikur, which literally means tearing. So one point is, if you use a serrated knife, then it tears the simanim rather than cutting them, and therefore the shechita would be possible. So now we're saying that if he's using something that has a smooth edge, then even though, again, you know, we're talking something that also has a serrated edge, and better he shouldn't use it, but nevertheless he did use it and did have a smooth edge, and therefore it's fine. The Mishnah continues, Hakol Shechtin, everyone can Shecht, which the Gemara is going to explain what that means. Again, earlier in the Perek, they talked about various people who shouldn't be Shechting, but now we're saying, other than those exceptions, everyone can Shecht. And we'll see in the Gemara a couple of explanations what this phrase means, Hakol Shechtin. Uva Kol Shechtin, you can Shecht with anything. Again, we'll see in the Gemara what that comes to include. I skipped the word. Hakol shechtin ul olam shechtin. You're also always allowed to shecht. Meaning, for example, you can have, let's say, a person might shecht by night. Now, by night, it might be harder to do an accurate shechita, but nevertheless, as we'll learn in the Gemara, as long as you have a light source, then it's kosher lachatchila. And if you don't have a light source, then b'di'evet it can be kosher as well, as long as you know it was a kosher shechita. We'll see that in the Gemara over the next couple of days. Over kol shechtin, and you can shecht with anything, chutz mi mago kotzer, with the exception of a sickle that's used for the harvest. Rashi points out that one is serrated, but also the serrations, the points of the serrations, point in one direction. So meaning, in other words, you're not talking about, like you think of a serrated knife, you can feel the serrations with your fingernail in both directions. As we'll learn in the Gemara, you have to check the knife with your fingernail. In this case, the serrations are kind of like you have on some saws, for example, where if you run your fingernail along it in one direction, it'll feel smooth, and if you run it in the other direction, then it'll catch on the points. So that kind of thing, then again, conceivably, you could shecht with it in one direction, but you shouldn't be shechting with it, because you might shecht in the other direction. Bamagera, and similarly a saw, where the serrations can be felt from both directions, vashinayim or teeth. So Rashi explains this is teeth, in other words, that are in the that are attached to the jaw of an animal. Now one point is, in other words, whether the fact that they're attached is the problem that we'll see in the Gemara, but there's also the problem there's also the issue that if you have more than one tooth there, then you have a space between them, and therefore it's the equivalent of a serration. So therefore that would be no good. So you can't use that. Vatsiporen, or fingernail. Here we're talking about a fingernail that's attached to the finger still, and that would be possible, because that in effect choke the animal, those don't cut the simonim cleanly, those rip them. Rashi points out, as far as the fingernail, there's a different point. The Gemara is going to tell us that the fingernail, the point is not that it's serrated. A fingernail is not. It's smooth. The problem is rather that it's that it's attached to the finger. And as we're going to learn in the Gemara, you can't use something that's attached for shchita. It has to be something that's detached. So the Gemara starts off, Hashoichet, when we said that if he shechted with one of these things, that implies, Di'eved ein lechatchil oloi. So that implies only if the Di'eved, if he shechted with one of the things mentioned in the first part of the Mishnah, then it'll be fine. But lechatchila, he shouldn't be shechting with them. So why? The Shlema b'mago yod, I can understand with a hand sickle, again, as we said, it has two sides to the blade, one of which is smooth and one is not. So the problem is, Joma Asila Mebed be'idach gisa. The problem is he might use the other side, which has serrations, and then it will be a possible shchita, because then he's ripping the simanim. But you're telling me that he can't use a sharpened stone, or that he can't use a reed. Why not? What would be the problem with them lachatchila that you can only use them b'di'eved or reminui? And in fact, I have a contradiction because a brisa says b'kol shechtin you can shecht with anything. Bein b'tzur you can use a sharpened rock. Bein b'tzchuchus you can use a piece of glass. Bein b'krumus sharpana or you can use a reed, a sharpened reed. So all of those things. Then the brisa is saying you can use lachatchila. So why is the Mishnah implying that when it comes to a rock or a reed, you can only use them b'di'eved? By the way, Rashi points out in this connection, in a similar vein, suppose you have a knife, which is basically has a smooth edge, but it has one pagam, it has one notch somewhere in it. So conceivably, you have enough of the length of the knife that you could shecht without using the notched part. Nevertheless, Rashi says, based on what we see in our Gemara over here, you shouldn't do that because you might end up using the notched part as well without realizing it. Other Rishonim talk about that and say maybe not necessarily, actually. In particular, if you wrap a cloth around that part that has the notch, then that'll be a reminder to you not to use that part, and then you might be able to use that knife, obviously, if you can... wet the knife, if you can hone the knife to get rid of that notch, that would be much better. But otherwise, many posts can say that you would, in fact, be allowed to do that by wrapping that area with a cloth or, I guess nowadays, with tape or something like that. Tosfos also points out that, so what? So you have three things listed in the Mishnah, one of which you can use only b'di'eved. So therefore, because of that, the Mishnah is using the expression b'di'eved as though it applied to all three of them. Why is that such a problem? So Tosfos says, because Tosfos explains why that would be, why to begin with the Tana lists together things that are mutter l'chatchila with things that are mutter only b'di'eved. So the answer is like kasha kan betolush kan mechuber. The answer is there's no contradiction because one's talking about where it's attached to the ground or where it's detached, and the other is where it's talking about where it's attached. The Amar of Kahana, as we find that Rav Kahana says, Ashurchet b'mechuber l'karka, if a person shecht with something that's attached to the ground, Rebbe posel v'Rav Chiya machshir. Rebbe says that it will be posel, Rav Chiya will say that it will be kosher. As we will go on into the learn in the Gemara, why it would be that why it would be posel if it's attached to the ground. So ab kam like kamachshir Rav Chiya el b'di'eved, but even Rav Chiya is only going to allow it b'di'eved. If you used it, then it'll be kosher b'di'eved. Aval hatchila loy, but even Rav Chiya does not hold that you could hatchila use something attached to the ground, and therefore our Mishnah phrases it as a b'di'eved because that's how it is, because it's only b'di'eved that you could do that. Well, the Gemara says, "B'mayo kimta k'Rav Chiya v'di'eved." So, what are you telling me then? Our Mishnah goes like Rav Chiya and saying that only v'di'eved, if you use these things, then it'll be kosher. But l'chatchila, even Rav Chiya wouldn't hold you should use it. Ela haditanya. The problem is, what about this that we learn in a brisa? But kol shechtin vein betolush vein mechuber. Another brisa says you can shecht with anything, whether it's detached from the ground or from where it originally grew, like the fingernail we mentioned in the Mishnah. Vein mechuber, or whether it's still attached. Vein shas sakin lamayla with sava behem lamata. And you can shecht whether the knife is above and the animal's neck is below, which would be the normal way of doing it, that you have the animal lying down on the ground or something, and then you use the shechita knife. but whether the knife is below and the neck of the animal is above. Now, the problem with that is, you might think there's a problem with that, Rashi points out, because the weight of the animal is going to be, it's going to go downward, and therefore you're going to end up, maybe the knife will end up pressing against the neck instead of cutting. One of the five basic things of shchita that the Gemara had mentioned before, one of the five things that would pass for shchita is called drossa, which means pressing. So if the knife presses against the neck, or whether it's gradual pressure, whether it's sudden pressure, like for example, a chopping motion, either of those is called drossa and tassels the shchita. So here you might think the neck of the animal is heavy enough that it might weigh down on the knife and cause drossa, but nevertheless, at this point, we're saying that we're not concerned about that. Now, the question is, Mani, well, who would this b'raisa be like if, say, you're saying that you could use it when it's attached? Loy Rebbe v'loy Reb Chiya, then it wouldn't work according to either Rebbe or Reb Chiya. Because according to Reb Chiya, we just said you can only do that to d'eved if you have a rock or whatever that's attached to the ground. According to Rebbe, it wouldn't mean be valid d'eved. So when this last b'raisa that we quoted says that you could use one that is attached, then even Reb Chiya, it seems, wouldn't allow that. And the answer is, La'olam Reb Chiya, Va'afilo Hachila. The answer is, after all, we can say that that braisa would go like Reb Chiya. And in fact, we're not going to say, like we said before, Reb Chiya is going to allow it only b'di'evid. We're going to say that it would apply, that Reb Chiya would allow it even like Hachila. The reason why, in the machlokas that we quoted, why Rebbe says it in terms of b'di'evid, lo'idiach ha'koyche de Rebbe, is to tell you how far Rebbe goes, that he's going to say, not only, forget about doing it l'chatchila, even b'di'evid, you're already shechted like that, with something attached to the ground, nevertheless, Rebbe is going to tell you that it's possible. Usually, by the way, we have a concept in Gemara called koycha de hetera odif. When we have a choice, we would rather show how far the one who's matir is willing to go to be matir. But Tosfos points out, since already the Braisa had said, b'kol shechtin ben betolosh ben b'mechuber, so we already know that Reb Chiya would allow you to shecht with something attached, and therefore there's nothing wrong with the Braisa then going on to present a machloikas between them about b'dievet. So we would say that Reb Chiya and Rebbe really are polar opposites. Reb Chiya so far was saying would allow you to shecht something with something attached to the ground. Even l'chatchila, Rebbe wouldn't even allow that b'dievet. Well, so the question is, the Elamach Nissen, the Katania Sheikh of d'yevet em l'chatchila loy, well then you're back to our Mishnah when it says that if he shechted, implying only if it was b'dievet, meaning l'chatchila you should not use a rock or a reed or whatever that's attached to the ground, Mani, now would it be like, now who would that be like? Loy Rebbe v'loy Reb Chiya, then it wouldn't be like either Rebbe or Reb Chiya. Either Reb Chiya afilu l'chatchila, because Reb Chiya would allow such a thing even l'chatchila, and then the Mishnah shouldn't be phrasing it in terms of ha-sheichet, one who shechted, which implies after the fact. According to Rebbe, it wouldn't be good even l'chatchila. Well, the answer is la'olam Reb Chiya. So the answer is that after all, Reb Chiya will indeed allow v'afilo chatchila. Reb Chiya will indeed allow these things even l'chatchila, not just b'di'evid. Whereas our Mishnah that says it in a b'di'evid way would be according to Rebbe. Well, didn't we just say that Rebbe still doesn't allow it even b'di'evid either? So now the question becomes kasha de Rebbe ad Rebbe. Well, then now we have a contradiction between two statements of Rebbe, because here we have the Braisa had said before that Rebbe says it's possible a sheichet b'mechubal akarka Rebbe posel, implying that it's completely possible even b'di'evid. Whereas our Mishnah, now the phrasing of our Mishnah seems to suggest that it would be kasha b'di'evid. So if it can't be according to Reb Chiya, because we established now that Reb Chiya allows it even l'chatchila, but Rebbe was saying doesn't allow it even b'di'evid, so now what? The answer is like kasha, kan b'machubah b'ikrei, kan b'tolosh v'losayf chibrei. It depends whether it was to begin with attached to the ground, or whether it was detached and then reattached. So let's say, for example, with the reed. When the reed is growing from the ground, if you then take an edge of it and sharpen it and make it usable as a knife, then if he shechted with it, it would be completely possible. And that would be what Rebbe is saying, that it's possible. When our Mishnah said that it's kosher, the d'yevet would be where the reed grew in the ground, then he cut it from the ground, sharpened it, and then stuck the end of it back into the ground. So now it will be, so now, because it was not originally attached to its place where it was attached in, to begin with, therefore Rebbe doesn't want you to do it l'chatchila, because you might come to use one that's actually still attached as it's growing, but nevertheless, b'dieved, it will be kosher. Well, the Gemara says, well, where do you get the idea that there is such a distinction between something that was attached all along versus something that was detached and then reattached later? So, Titania, we know that because it says the following in a Braisa. Hashechet b'muchni. If a person shechts using a muchni. Now, muchni is actually related distantly to the English word, to the English word machine. Here, what it means, it actually explains, it means a wheel. So it means like the, in other words, so he, what he does is he attaches the blade, he attaches the knife with the blade up to the wheel, so as you turn the wheel, the knife will be able to cut. So now, if he does that, so shashurim amuchni, shchita sekshera, then his shchita will be kosher, because fine, he turns the wheel and shecht, it's not that much different than holding the knife in his hand and shechts. But mechubal akarka, the Braisa continues, if it's attached to the ground, shchita sekshera, then it's also his shchita is kosher. Now that itself implies, shchita sekshera would imply only b'dieved. The Braisa continues, not sakin b'koisel. Suppose a person stuck a knife into the wall, and now, so again, the knife is standing in one place there on the wall, and then he takes the animal's neck, or the bird's neck, and moves it back and forth on the knife. That also b'shochat b'yishacht with the shchita sekshera. It would also be kosher. Now the Braisa continues, hoyatsur yoytsim in akoisel. Suppose that there's a rock sticking out of the wall. Oikona oylame elav. Or if there's a reed that's growing, or it's grown, or a reed growing on its own. B'shochat b'y, and he shechted with it, shchita sepsula, then its shchita would be posel. So Tosfos, by the way, points out, when we say oimin me'elav, we don't mean that it grew by itself as opposed to a person planting it. That's not what makes the difference. It just means, in other words, that oila me'elav, it means, in other words, as opposed to, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, the wall we're talking about is a natural wall, like a wall of a cave or something like that, not a wall that was built with stones. And the same way, kona oimin me'elav would mean that the reed is growing in its natural place. So now the Braisa says, shchitas epsula. Well, kashin adodi, well, then we have a contradiction. First, the Braisa is saying if it's attached to the ground, then it's shchita is kosher. Now we're saying that if it's sticking out of the wall or the reed is growing, then it's fossil. El alav shmamina. So therefore, that shows that it must be a difference. And again, this is according to Rebbe, shiny ben mechuba meikra latolosh l'vaseif chibrei, that there is in fact a difference between something that has all along been attached versus something that was detached and then reattached. So here we're saying that, in other words, so here the knife was detached from the ground, for example. Then he stuck it into the wall, cemented it into the wall or whatever. Fine, it still remains kosher b'dieved. Versus when we talk about a rock sticking out of the wall, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, we're talking about, for example, a natural rock wall where the wall has been there all along. Well, okay. So we'll get into that, but first the Gemara says, so Shmamina, so that proves that there is in fact that difference, whether it's naturally attached or not. Okay, the Gemara continues, Omamar, now let's go back to the Braisa. We said, Ashechet b'muchni shchita sekshera. We said that if he shechts using a wheel with a knife attached to it, then the shchita is kosher. Well, the question is, Valtani shchita sepsula, but we learn in a different Braisa that such a shchita would be possible. And the answer is, Lekasha, hobes sauna de pachra, hobes sauna de maya. Depends what kind of wheel we're talking about. There's one that's turned by a potter versus one that's turned by water. Pachra means a potter. So Rashi points out they have a wheel that they use when they're making clay vessels. They turn them on a wheel. So that one would be kosher because you're turning the wheel and the knife moves with it and therefore it's fine and you have koyach adam, you have human power that goes into it. As opposed to a water wheel where the water is turning it, so there has to be koyach adam, there has to be human power involved in a shchita. Rashi points out, for example, that later on we're going to learn in the next parak, for example, that suppose a knife fell, let's say you had a knife on a shelf or something, and then it fell and happened to hit the animal's neck in such a way that it did a kosher shchita, nevertheless it would be possible because there's no koyach adam involved. So by the same token over here then, it has to be that a wheel that a person is turning.
What if you pour the water?
Ah, so that's the next answer. The Gemara says, another answer is you could say both of them, in fact, are talking about a water wheel. There's a difference between the first energy and the second energy. Meaning, if you, so Rashi explains, so let's say, for example, you had this water wheel. Now, you had a piece of wood there that was blocking the water. Now you move that piece of wood, or the equivalent nowadays would be turning on a faucet, and the water starts flowing and turning the wheel, that's still considered koyach adam, because you took away the blockage that was preventing the water from going, and now the water flows. And now, therefore, when you turn that first turn of the wheel, it's considered koyach adam. As opposed to when you have the second one after the water has already turned the wheel one full. Rashi says Pam Rishon or Shnia, once or twice. So apparently, according to Rashi, it's not necessarily a certain number of turns. It's just when you can see that already the original force of the water that he let go is already done, and now what's turning it is continued current of the water. The Rambam phrases it saying the first turn would be kosher, after that it would be possible. So that would be the difference, whether there's direct koyach or not. As we find, Rapapa making such a distinction in a different connection. Haiman de kafse lachavre, Rapapa describes, suppose a person ties up somebody else, the ashkelale bidka demaya, and caused a flood of water to come on him. So the same thing, in other words, Yashi explains, like he diverted the water to go and flood the guy and drown him. So the same thing. Now the guy dies from drowning, chayev, so the one who did that will be chayev, my time is giri didehu, because it's his direct arrows, it's the equivalent of having done it directly, because he moved the thing that caused that, now the water can flow, and therefore it's considered the equivalent of koyach rishon. There's no grumma, there's no indirect cause over here. My time gire didehu dahani, because in effect it's his arrows that have been effective against him. But again, vahani mili b'koyach rishon. But again, that would only apply to the first koyach al b'koyach sheni groma ba'almahu. But once it's the second one already, if the water was far enough, so Rashi explains, if he tied up the guy, the victim, far enough away from the water that it takes time for the water to go there. Now he's the one who made the hole. He's the one who caused the water to flow. Nevertheless, at that point it will be groma. He will be potter from Misa Space did, Hashem will punish the person for doing that, but nevertheless, it's only considered a grumma, it's an indirect thing. Tosfos discusses a little bit over here the ins and outs of the details when we consider it grumma and not. We have other examples of that come up in other areas of halacha, the difference between grumma and doing something directly. One example is actually as far as Netilas Yadayim. You have a similar kind of thing where, so for example, let's say you don't have a cup available to wash, and instead you're going to turn on the faucet and cause the water to flow. So again, you have a distinction between koyach rishon and koyach sheni, the first gush of water that comes out of the faucet versus afterwards when it continues flowing on its own. So the first gush would be kosher for netilas yadayim. You just put your hand under the faucet. The other ones after that would not. You'd have to open and close the faucet repeatedly. And you have other examples in halacha where it comes up, this difference between koyach rishon and koyach sheni. There is, by the way, a whole different explanation that Amah, the Yad Ramah in Sanhedrin, the Gemara, is also in Sanhedrin because the topic of murder comes up over there. So the Yad Ramah points out over there that no, it's not a difference how far he was from the water. The fact is, what's the difference? It's like shooting an arrow. It doesn't matter how close or far the guy is. So he explains a couple of other possibilities. It can mean that, it can mean the water that immediately comes versus the water that flows afterwards. In other words, if let's say, for example, the original gush of water is not going to be enough to drown the guy, only a later water, then that might be considered koyach sheni already. And then he goes to say also if you have, for example, something that temporarily blocks the flow of water after that, and then it finally comes up enough water to overcome that and continue going, then that would be called koyach sheni. Whatever. The point is that we see, in other words, there's this distinction, and so the same way over here, as far as this wheel with the shtit, the knife attached, there'll be a difference between the beginning of it and afterwards, between whether when he directly caused the wheel to turn by letting loose the water versus afterwards. In general, this whole thing comes up in general in halacha as far as questions of things done by machine. Tzitzis made by machine, matzah baked by machine, etc. There's a whole discussions and whole huge shilas atrovas on the subject of what we consider direct versus what we consider grumma. For example, can we use machine matzahs? Most poskim, once machines were invented for the purpose, most poskim opposed it, although there were a minority of poskim who allowed it. Similarly as far as tzitzis, similarly as far as a variety of other things. Okay. Now, let's go on. So far we've been discussing, we discussed the machlokas of Rebbe and Reb Chiya, and we established so far. Do you want to say something?
Regarding the matzahs, is it just for Pesach, or is it all around the year?
Well, we're talking about for Pesach. I mean, the year-round, you have no mitzvah to eat matzah. Year-round, you just, if you eat bread, you make a mochi. That doesn't matter whether the bread was baked by machine or not.
Pesach.
Yeah. For Pesach, where the matzahs have to be made, l'shem matzahs mitzvah. So the question is, you who are operating the machine, is your kavana good enough for it to be considered matzahs mitzvah? So part of the factor that goes into that is this question of koyach rish and koyach sheni. I think there's some feedback. There seems to be some feedback from your mic or something over there. Yeah, thank you. All right. Okay, so far we discussed Reb Chiya and Rebbe, and we established so far that as follows. If the thing is attached to the ground, if it's attached to begin with, then Rebbe will say it's outright posel, and Reb Chiya will hold its kosher. If it was detached and then reattached to the ground, Rebbe will hold its kosher only with the Yeved, Reb Chiya will allow it even l'chatchila. So now let's deal with this question of where's Rebbe getting the point that something used for shechita should not be attached to the ground. So the Gemara tells, Yosef Rav Achoda de Reb Chiya. Rav was one time sitting behind Reb Chiya. The Reb Chiya came to Rebbe, and Reb Chiya was sitting directly in front of Rebbe. So Reb Chiya was one of the senior Talmidim of Rebbe. Rav was Reb Chiya's nephew. He was actually a double nephew. The Gemara mentions in some places that Reb Chiya came from a blended family where one of his half brothers married one of his half sisters in such a way the brother and the sister are not related to each other at all. But one of them was Reb Chiya's half brother, and the other one was Reb Chiya's half from the same father, and the other one was Reb Chiya's half sister from the same mother, and they married one another, and Rav was their son. So Rav was actually a double nephew of Reb Chiya, but more to the point, Rav was one of the junior Talmidim at this time, so Rav in general, in those times, in the yeshivas, they had the Talmidim would sit in the order of their greatness. So the senior Talmidim would sit in front, and the junior Talmidim would sit further back. So Reb Chiya is sitting there in the front row in front of Rebbe, and Rav is sitting behind him. The Yosef Rebbe Vakarma. Rebbe was sitting and teaching as follows. Minayin l'shchita shu betolush. How do we know that shchita has to be done with something detached from the ground? Where again, there Rebbe was saying, where if it's attached naturally, then the shchita is completely possible. And if it was attached afterwards, then it's only kosher b'dieved. So shenema, because the pasuk says, by the akedah, by yikachas ha-ma'achelas l'shchit, Avraham took the ma'achelas, took the knife to Shech Yitzchak. So by yikach, he took it, implies that it wasn't attached to anything. Omalei Rav Reb Chiya Maika Omar. So Rav asked Reb Chiya, what did Rebbe say? I didn't quite understand what Rebbe is saying, how he got from that pasuk that shchita would be possible with something that's attached. In fact, Tosfos points out on the face of it that's talking about Kodshim. How do we know the same thing is true as far as Cholin? Okay, Tosfos discusses how we know that. But in any case, though, but Rav asked Reb Chiya, what did Rebbe say? Omalei, so he answers with an expression, Vov d'chtiva ufta ka'amar. He's saying like a Vov that's written on a log of wood. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, imagine you take a piece of wood, not a smoothed out piece of wood, but let's say you take like a natural piece of wood or a natural log or something and try to write a letter Vav on it. You're not going to get a coherent letter over there. You're going to have a little bit of ink here, a little bit of ink there. It's going to look like smudge kind of. So they use that as an expression to mean that to mean like something that's not so glatt, something that's not quite so smooth and easy to understand. In other words, Reb Chiya is basically saying that Rebbe is saying something it doesn't really seem to be logical. This explanation of Rebbe. How can we say that? In fact, then Rashi gives another explanation. Another explanation is the grooves themselves in the wood resemble letters Vav, because the letter Vav is basically a straight line, and the individual grooves that you have all over the place in a natural piece of wood resemble Vavs. So imagine you tried to read those as a bunch of Vavs, you'd be reading nonsense. The point is, in other words, according to either explanation, Reb Chiya, we just said before, disagrees with Rebbe. He says you are allowed to shech with something attached to the ground. So therefore, Reb Chiya is kind of like putting down what Rebbe had said and saying it's like the equivalent of a vav written on a piece of wood or like the grooves themselves on the wood. It doesn't really make sense. Well, the Gemara asks about Kra Kamar. The fact is, Rebbe said a pasuk. What is Reb Chiya doing with that pasuk? The answer is fine. Krodzu zuse d'Avram avinu k'mashmol. D'Avram k'mashmolon. Fine. The pasuk wants to tell us how quick Avram was to do the mitzvah. That he, so Rashi says, in other words, that Avram Avinu wanted to be prepared. What if he comes to the site where Hashem tells him to bring Yitzchak as a korban, and he can't find a natural sharpened rock over there? So he made sure to bring a knife along with him to be on the safe side. But that doesn't mean, in other words, that you have to lahalacha. Maybe if Avram had come there and found a sharpened rock sticking out of the ground, maybe he could have used that. So that doesn't necessarily prove that you can't use that. So that's all. Rashi brings another explanation over here. The first explanation, again, is that Rav is saying, how I heard what Rebbe said, but I don't understand how he's learning from the Pasuk. And Rav Chiya is saying, you know what, I don't agree with it either. I say the Pasuk is only coming to tell us that Avraham was a Zoriz. Rashi gives another explanation. Rav did not actually hear. He was too far away to hear what Rebbe had said. He heard him saying a Pasuk, but he didn't know regarding what. So Rav asked Rav Chiya, what was Rebbe darshaning from that pasuk? And he says he was explaining from it that shchita is posel v'mechubar. But he says, I don't agree with it. And so Rav says, so what would you do with the pasuk? And Rav Chiya says, I would say the pasuk is just telling us that Avraham was a zoriz. Okay. But that's where Rebbe learns from that you can't do shchita with something attached. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omar, and the halacha, by the way, is like Rebbe in that. First of all, we said before in the Gemara, that our Mishnah, we ended up saying, goes according to Rebbe, and the halacha is usually like a Stam Mishnah, but in addition, in general, when we have a Machlokas Rebbe and Rav Chiya, the halacha is usually like Rebbe. The Gemara actually even has an expression in some places, given that Rav Chiya was Rebbe's Talmud, the Gemara sometimes says, Rebbe leshna Rav Chiya minayin lo, if Rebbe hadn't taught such and such, how would Rav Chiya even know it? So here we see Rav Chiya is perfectly capable of arguing with Rebbe, but on the whole, we usually assume that what Rav Chiya learned, he learned from his Rebbe, from Rebbe, and therefore the halacha is that, and therefore the halacha is like Rebbe. Okay. So now the Gemara continues. Let's talk about this matter of things that were detached from the ground and then have been reattached. Let's talk about how those apply in various areas of halacha. There's other areas of halacha where there's differences between something that's attached and something that's detached. So let's talk about those. Omar Rava, so Rava says, let's start with as follows. Pshitali, it's obvious to me, tolosh alosof chibrei, le'inin avaris kechavim habitolosh. When it comes to something that was detached from the ground and then reattached, when it comes to avodah zarah, we will say that it's still considered like detached. Namely as follows. There's a halacha, we learned in Masechta Avodah Zarah a while back, that the Goyim sometimes worship natural features. Let's say, for example, the Goyim worship mountains. One example, actually, is, for example, Mount Fuji in Japan. In the Japanese religion, they consider it a sacred mountain, and they worship it. So now, does that mountain become usur to climb or to have hana from? The answer is no. It's a natural thing. We learn from a pasuk. The pasuk mentions they have to destroy elikehem al haharim, their gods which are on the mountains. So from that we learn, the way the pasuk phrases it, the mountains themselves are not considered their gods and they're not asabana. You're not allowed to, by the way, the halacha is, you're not allowed to use them for serving Hashem. So for example, you wouldn't be able to take stones from such a mountain and use them to build a mizbeach, because it's considered disgusting for Hashem. But to use those stones for ordinary purposes, or to climb the mountain, or whatever, that you're perfectly allowed to do. But now, let's say, for example, a goy were to take a stone, and that was a supposable goy, so by the same token, let's say that, for example, there's a natural rock sticking out of the ground, and the goyim worship it, then again, it wouldn't become usur. But suppose that a goy now took this rock and then carved it off of the ground, and then reattached it to the ground there or someplace else, obviously it would be considered detached, and it would, in fact, be usur b'hana. As in fact, we learn in a Braisa, Goy Sabach and Shittim Kubetis, say it should really be Domar Rav. Rav explains, Hamishtach v'labayis shaloi osur. If a person bows down to his own house, then he would make it osur. Only if it's his own, because if it's somebody else, he can't generally ask for something that belongs to somebody else. But here, where it's his own house, and he owns the house, if he now worships it as an Avodah Zarah, then it'll become osur b'hana. The house is built of stones, but it doesn't matter, because those stones are not in their original natural place. They were detached from the ground and then reattached. So therefore, Sir Robert says it's obvious that we would know that in that case it's considered detached. Now, what about another example? In Hechsher Zroyim Tanoihi, what about when it comes to the dinim of being machshir food to be makabel tuma? We know that food has to become wet with one of the shiva mashkim, one of seven liquids, in order to be able to be makabel tuma. Now, In addition, now you have dinim in that connection. First of all, the food itself has to be detached from the ground to be able to be makabel tumah. If it becomes wet while it's growing, well, every food becomes wet while it's growing. But also, you have a din that you also have a din as follows. A major part of Masechta Machshirin talks about this concept, namely that it has to be that the liquid that's going to make that's going to wet the food to make it susceptible to tumah. It has to be that liquid came from its original place, the rotzayin, that you wanted it to. So let's say, for example, you decided you wanted a drink of water, and you dipped a cup into a lake or something and drew the water, and then filled the cup with water. That water is now able to be makshir other food to be makabel truma. But let's say, for example, So an example would be, let's say Rashi says, suppose that you have, that you saw rain falling and you decided, good, I want to catch this rain in a container. Afterwards, if food falls into that container, then it will become mukshal kabel tumah. You didn't want the food to fall in. Nevertheless, though, because you wanted the rain, that we wanted the water to be in that keli, then it would be machshir lekabel tumah. However, Rashi goes on to point out that would apply only if the rain itself you intended to use for some purpose of something that itself is detached from the ground. Namely, in other words, if you wanted that, if you, for example, if you have a pit in the ground and you want that the rain should fill it up, so you'll have water to drink, that water will not yet be makshir lekabel tumah. So now if food falls in there and you didn't want it to, then it won't become a kabel tumah. So now if you have something that was detached from the ground and now reattached, for example, a building that was built, then we're going to talk about whether these dinim of hechshir lekabel tumah apply. So that's a machloikas tanoim, says Rava. Detan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Machshirin on this subject. A koifa ka'ora ala koisel. Suppose a person turns over a plate on top of the wall. So you have the top edge of a wall, and a person puts a plate over there. Bishvil shetudach. He has in mind that when it rains, then the rain should fall on this plate and clean it. So then, hareza b'chiyutan. So then, now when the Torah mentions this concept of being machshir lekabel tumah, the expression in the pasuk is b'chiyutan mayim al zera. If water is placed on a seed. Now the word yutan, the Gemara elsewhere explains in Bava Metzia that the word yutan is spelt in the pasuk yud tof nun. Now, if it meant shall be placed, then it could have been written it with a vav for the shuruk sound, for the u sound. Yud vav tuf nun would unquestionably mean yutan, it was placed. But because it's written in the Torah without the vav, it can be read as though it also said yitin, he places. From this we learn that it has to be, there has to be that there was, that he places, namely that there was a das, that there was a rotzayin of his for it to happen, in order for that water to be machshir lekabel tumah. So now, he put that plate over there, intending that it should get wet with the rain so that it'll be clean. So now, therefore, there's a yitain over here. He wanted that water to go on the plate, which is something detached from the ground. So now, hareza b'chiyutan. So now, the rule of kiyutan will apply if later on some of that water falls on food, or the food falls into it, or whatever. Then the food will be now susceptible to becoming tamei. The shvilshala yoka koisel, on the other hand, continues the Mishnah, if you put the plate over there because you want to protect the wall itself, you don't want the wall itself to be damaged by the rain, and therefore you put the plate there to block the rain, then kiyutan would not apply. Now that water that fell on the plate, if now a drop of that water falls later on fruit, it will not make that fruit mukshal the kabel tumah. So now the question is, Hagufa Kasha. So we have to understand, though, the Mishnah seems to be contradicting itself. You're telling me if you put the plate over there because you want the plate itself to get washed, then ki yutan applies, and that water will now be able to be machshir lekabel tumah. But the implication seems to be that if you put it in order that the wall itself should get washed, meaning Rashi explains, let's say you wanted that the water should fall on the wall and clean it off of whatever filth is on it. So you put the plate in such a position that, let's say, for example, the rain was falling, the water was dripping near the wall, and you put the plate in such a position that it should direct the water onto the wall. So it sounds like Einzeh b'chiyutan. It sounds like kiyutan would not apply. This water is not machshir lekabel tumah, because only if you meant it to wash the plate. Then you're saying only if you put in the plate to block the rain from coming onto the wall, then kiyotan doesn't apply. Implying if you wanted it in order for the wall itself to get washed, it sounds like it would be kiyotan. It sounds like it would be machshir the kabel tumah. So what is it? So we understand that if you wanted the plate to get washed, then kiyotan would apply. We understand that if you wanted to protect the wall from the rain, then it's not kiyotan. What about if you wanted the wall itself to get washed? You angled the plate in such a way that the water should fall on the wall. Does kiyotan apply or not? If fruit afterwards touches that wet wall or a little bit of that water falls off the wall and falls onto fruit, will it make it mukhshir lekabel tumah or not? Amar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar says, Tavra, there seems to be a contradiction in this Mishnah. Whoever taught one part of the Braisa of the Mishnah did not teach the other part. In other words, there are two Tanoim who disagree whether this wall. Now again, this wall is built out of stones or something, which were originally attached to the ground and then were carved out of the ground and then put back together to form a wall. So do we consider that something attached to the ground still or not? So it's going to be two different Tanoim. So we see, according to that, says Rava, according to that way of looking at it, then Tanoim would disagree on that point. There's other different explanation. The word Tavra is that it's a Lashon Shvua, that it's a Lashon of Rabbi Elazar swearing and saying that there's no way to make this Mishnah work according to one Tana. It means necessarily it's contradicting one another. Tosfos brings elsewhere from Rabbeinu Hananel that's what it means, that it's a Lashon Shvua. Anyway, that's one explanation. Rav Papa Amar Kula Chad Tanahu. On the other hand, Rav Papa says no, the Mishnah can be made to work all according to one Tana. Because you can distinguish between a wall of a cave, which is a natural formation in the ground. So in other words, what happened? It doesn't have to be a natural cave, let's say, but that's a hole in the ground that you dug and left. Let's say you dug two holes next to one another in the ground and left a wall between them. So that wall, that dirt, those stones for that wall have been there all along. So it's attached to the ground all along. Hobokosal binyan, as opposed to a normal wall that's built out of stones that were put together afterwards. So you can explain, says Rapapa, that the two parts of the Mishnah are talking about that respectively. For Hachikama, so therefore understand the Mishnah as follows. You put a plate upside down on the wall and you want the plate itself to get washed, then kiyotan will apply to that water because you definitely wanted that water to go on something tolush, on something completely detached from the ground, because of course the plate is not attached to the ground at all. But the implication the Mishnah is implying, if you're doing it because you want the wall to be washed, then kiyotan will not apply. Now, when will that apply if it's a wall of a cave, a natural wall? But if it's a wall of a building, then only only if you're putting it because you didn't want the wall itself to get damaged by the rain, then it's not kiyotan, because then, in other words, the point is not so much because then you're dealing with tolush versus mechuber, but because if you put the plate over there to prevent the wall from getting damaged, you would prefer it didn't rain at all. You know, in the case where you want the plate to be washed, you want the rain. You want the water to come and wash the plate for you. In the case where you want to wash the wall, the same thing. But where you want to prevent the wall from getting damaged by the rain, as far as you're concerned, it would be better if it didn't rain in the first place, and then you don't have to put the plate over there. Therefore, kiyotan wouldn't apply. So that's the kosel binyan. When you come to a building of a wall of a building, the shvushal yokar kosel hudayin mechiyotan, only if you put it there to prevent the wall from getting damaged by the rain, then kiyotan wouldn't apply. But in that case, if you put the plate over there and put it in a position to cause the wall to get washed and wet from the rain, areza mechiyotan, then kiyotan would apply. Because now this is a wall that was built out of stones that were attached, that were detached from the ground, and now have been reattached.
What happens if, like, the bottom of it is attached to the ground, but then the top of it was not?
So suppose the top bottom was attached as a natural thing, and then the top is not. But Pashtus, then the answer would be, it depends what part of the wall you wanted to get washed. It's a good question, but I would imagine the answer would be, depends which part of the wall you wanted to get washed, the whole thing or only part of it. So therefore, so now, Rapapa is a Talmud of Abaya and Rava. So Rava had said that it's a machlokas tanoim because he was following what Rabbi Elazar said, that of necessity this Mishnah must represent the opinion of two different tanoim, because otherwise it contradicts itself. So therefore, that was why Rava was saying, when you have something that was detached from the ground. And now we attach. It's a machlokas tanoim because that was he was following Rabbi Loza's svara that there's no other way to explain the Mishnah. Once we have Rapapa, then it comes out not necessarily as a machlokas tanoim. In fact, we would say that like with Avodah Zarah, something that was detached and then reattached, like a building built out of bricks or stones, is in fact still considered detached. So the same way as it would become Osir Ba'ana, if a person worships it as Avodah Zarah, the same way it will become Ki Yurtan, the dinim of Hechsher Tumah will apply to it as well. Now that Rava gave all that introduction of things that are more obvious to him, now Boy Rava, so now Rava asks the question, suppose that you have, like we've talked about before, something that was detached from the ground and then reattached to the ground, like the stone or the reed or whatever. As far as shchita, what would be the din? Would it be kosher or not? Now that we established that Rebbe says, and the halacha is like Rebbe, that something that's attached to the ground is possible, would that apply even to something that was detached and then reattached? Now, why does he know? We said in the Gemara all along, we said that's Machlokas Rebbe and Rebbe. Rashi says, apparently Rava did not know of that. So Rashi just says he apparently didn't know of that whole discussion before. Tosfos points out that on the face of it, still he could have inferred it from the Mishnah. Tosfos discusses the question is even according to Rebbe, would we say that it is considered tolush and therefore it would be kosher, or maybe according to Rebbe, there's no difference. Maybe within Rebbe's opinion, there's no actual difference. Once Rebbe says that it is possible, maybe it would be possible even by the Eved. In other words, again, according to Rashi, the question is, he's asking, would Rebbe allow it? The question kind of comes out the same according to either one of them, but according to Rashi, it's that he didn't know of the whole discussion before. According to Tosfos, he did know there's a machlokas Rebbe and Rebbe on the subject, but he didn't know what Rebbe would hold as far as something that was attached, that was reattached to the ground later on, whether Rebbe would allow it b'di'evet, or whether he wouldn't even allow it b'di'evet, and he would say, that's completely possible. And on the side over here, there's a reference to Marshall and Marshall, who discussed this Tosfos further. Marshall says that, he thought the Mishnah as Taka talking about where it was detached, and just saying because you can't because maybe he thought that maybe you're not allowed to shech to begin with a rock or a reed to begin with. Maybe he wasn't familiar with the Braisa that says that you are allowed to. But Marshall explains that brings that as a possible explanation of what Rava's question is. Marshall goes and discusses further another possibility of Rava himself had said that later on in our Mishnah it says Bakol Shurchdin means you can use a rock or glass or whatever. So therefore, so when the Brai said Bidiyevid, so what does it mean? So therefore he wants to know would it be allowed Bidiyevid or not. So the Gemara says Tashma, let's bring a proof. We learned in the Braisa before, Hayatsur Yotzim and Akosel, if a rock was sticking out of the wall, Oshayakona Olam Eilav, or reed was growing naturally, the Shachat Bayani Shechted with it, Shchitas Epsula. Then it's Shchita is possible. Well, there you have your answer. A rock sticking out of the wall, but Pashka says you built a wall and had a rock sticking out of it. But the Gemara says that's not a proof because Hochamai skin, but Kosamara. No, because the Braisa may be talking about the wall of a cave. Again, a natural wall where the rocks and the dirt are in their position as they were to begin with. And the Gemara says, which is the same distinction as we made before. As far as Hechshu v'Kabal Tumah, maybe we could say the same distinction over here. And the Gemara says, Dekanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah, of the Braisa. Dekatani dumya dekonim oylem eilov. Because the Braisa mentions it in the same breath as a reed growing naturally, where it means it's growing in its natural position. So sure, then we should assume that the rock of the Braisa means a rock sticking out of a natural wall, like a wall or a cave. That wouldn't necessarily prove as far as the Rava's question, which is where you stuck a rock into the ground or into a wall or whatever and shechted with it, would it be kosher? So the Gemara continues, Toshma, well, let's prove it in the continuation of the Braisa. It says, not sakin v'kosel, if he stuck a knife into the wall, v'shochatba, and he shechted using that knife stuck into the wall, shitasik shreda, then it's kosher shreda. Now, v'pashto, so a knife and a rock would be the same thing. The answer is not necessarily, shiny sakin v'lo mevatale. The difference is, that a knife, he's not necessarily going to be mevatel over there. In other words, he sticks a knife into the wall. He doesn't intend to leave it there forever. A knife is a valuable thing. So therefore, he'll stick it in the wall temporarily, and then he'll take it out. So you could argue that it's already now it's not considered permanently attached. As opposed to a rock, if he sticks a rock to a wall, he may well decide to just leave it there forever. So maybe it's already considered. Maybe already it should be considered mechuber. Should be considered attached. Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma, but mechuber l'karkish, tosik shera. Fine, but after all, the Braisa continues that when it's attached to the ground, then it's a kosher shvita. We explained before in Tesvav Amar Beis that that means when it was detached from the ground and then reattached. Fine, so therefore, so that would mean, in other words, so therefore, so on the face of it. So one part has to be talking about a natural rock, and the other part has to be talking about where it was detached and then reattached. So one would be possible, and the other would be kosher b'dieved. But the Gemara says that's not a proof because Dilma Parushi Komafarishla. Because we could say the Braisa maybe is explaining what kind of thing that's Mechubal Akarko would be kosher, would be, for example, where he stuck a knife into the wall and he doesn't plan to be Mevatel over there. And then when he talks about if it's Mechubal Akarko, you should say that's only explaining it's not really a separate case. They'd be saying, my mechubal karka, what do we mean that it's kosher when it's attached to the ground, sakin, only with a knife, delay mevatale, because he wouldn't be mevatale over there. So that doesn't prove necessarily that in the case of a rock it would in fact be kosher. Maybe in fact it would be possible even be the evan. So you can't really prove one way or the other from the Braisa. And the fact is, because we did have, even though, again, we're saying according to Tosfos and Marshal and Marshal, maybe Rava wants to explain the Braisa in a different way, and the Gemara is trying to see whether we can do that. But the fact is, the Gemara before on Tesvav Amud Beis have just said flat out that the Braisa is distinguishing between something naturally attached versus something detached later on. So most Rishonim Paskin like that. And most Rishonim Paskin like that and say that if you use something that's reattached to the ground afterwards, then b'dieved it is possible. You do have over there the Shach and the Taz discuss a case. Suppose the person was actually mevatelit. First of all, the Rosh actually holds it would be also b'dieved, and the Shach brings also from the Shach brings from the Marashal that at least if he was mevatelit, that if he, for example, suppose Taki stuck a rock into the ground and decided, you know what, I'm just going to leave it there forever, then maybe indeed it would be possible. Okay. Omar, let's get back to the Braisa. So we said, not sakin bakosel. So if he stuck a knife into the wall, the shochat bar, and he shechted with it, shritosek shera, then his shchita would be kosher. However, the Gemara says it's not so simple. Omar of Onan, Omar Shmuel, lo shonu elashas sakin lamayel of etzava behem lamata. That would apply only if the knife was above and the animal's neck was below. Because in that way, again, there's no problem of drosa, there's no problem that you're going to press instead of doing a cutting, instead of doing a back and forth motion like you have to do for a proper shchita. Abel, sakin lamata of etzava behem lamayel, but Shmuel of Onan says in the name of Shmuel, if the knife is below and the neck of the animal is above, chayshinan, then we have a concern. Shema Yidris, that he might press and make the shchita possible, because after all, the neck is fairly heavy. So the Gemara asks, "Bokatoni ben shasak and lamata, the tzayva behem lamayla ben shasak and lamayla, the tzayva behem lamata." Didn't we have one of the brises that we quoted on Tesvav Amud Beis said that it is kosher whether the knife is above and the neck of the animal below, or the other way around? The answer is Amar Rav Zid Letzadin Katani. Rav Zid answers the Braisa is actually talking about two different cases. It's not talking about one continuous case. It's talking about two different cases. So in other words, it's like the Sak Lamata Vatsava Behem Lamaila. When you have if the knife is below and the neck of the animal is above, that would only be the tolush. That would work only if the knife is not attached to anything. You're holding the knife in your hand, then there's no problem if you're shechting upward because you're not going to have drossa because the weight of the animal is not pressing on the knife. Because you're holding the knife and you can adjust how you're holding it so that the animal's neck won't press on it and you'll do a proper shvita. Sack in the mile of itzava behem lamata, but if the knife is above and the animal's neck is below, then it's fine. Even b'mechubur, then it's fine. Even if it's attached to the ground, again b'dieved, as we said, because then there's no problem of pressure, and then it'll still be a kosher shchita either way. Okay. So, Tosfos does discuss over here that it may not be so simple even then when we're saying it's only kosher, that it's only kosher b'dieved, first of all, we're saying, but anyway, shouldn't there be a concern even, shouldn't there at least be a concern that he did do drossa? What about if he says, I'm certain that I didn't do drossa, but still, what if he does the same kind of thing another time? So in any case, the point is, but Zvid is saying, if you're holding the knife, then it's not a problem, even if the neck is above, because you will be able to prevent the animal from weighing down on the knife and causing drossa. Rapapa gives a different answer. But Oifa Dekalo, the difference would be as far as a bird, which is lighter. So with a bird, even if the knife is attached to the wall or whatever, it's still fine. It'll still be a kosher shkita because the neck of a bird is not that heavy, and therefore there won't be drossa. So you don't have to, as Rashi says, Reb Zvid's answer is a bit of a doichuk. I have to say that Braisa is talking about two different cases in one. Now, it's much more simple. It depends whether you're talking about a bird or not. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara continues, Omer of Chista, Omer of having talked about a reed, as far as using a reed for Shita, let's talk about a reed, using a reed for other purposes of Halacha. So the Gemara says, Omer of Chista, Omer of Yitzchak, so Chista says the name of Yitzchak, for Amilab Masnisa Tana. Others say we learned the following point in a Braisa. Hey, Dvarim Nemru Bekrumis Shokana. There are five dinim that the Chachamim said regarding a sharpened reed. Number one, Ein Shechtin Bo, you should not shecht with it. Now, we said that you could shecht with it, but the point is, as we're going to say, that it depends whether splinters are going to come off it. So if splinters come off it, it'll make a possible shchita, because then you won't have a sharp knife. So therefore, so you can't shecht with that kind of reed. The ein molin ba, you can't do a miller with it for the same reason, because the splinters could get into the wound and set up an infection, and it'll be tremendously dangerous for the baby. This was, by the way, in today's Perek Echad of Rambam, I mentioned this point. The ein mechatkin ba basar, you should not cut meat with it for the same reason. All these things, Rashi explains, is all the problem, because of splinters that'll make it dangerous. So in the case of the miller, you don't want it to make a hole there where it shouldn't, and the boy is going to be injured. In the case of shchita, again, it may pierce. The splinters may pierce the simanim rather than cutting them like they're supposed to. Cutting meat with it, the same problem. Then you're going to have splinters in the meat, and then you eat the meat, and you'll swallow a splinter. The ein machatzin b'shinayim, you shouldn't use it to pick your teeth. Same problem. The ein mekanchin ba. And you shouldn't use it to wipe after going to the bathroom. All for the same reason, because splinters that come off it may be very dangerous. This is the kind of thing, by the way, when you learn this kind of Gemara and other Gemaras that talk about what they had to use for wiping back in the day, I always think that when we say the bracha asher yotzar, it's a good thing to have in mind not only that your body functions the way it's supposed to, but also that Hashem put us in a time when we have much easier things to wipe with. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara asks, in Shechtenbaugh, what are you saying? That the first thing is you can't shecht with it. For Hatanya, we learned in a Braisa, Bakol Shechten, that you can shecht with anything, Bain Bitsur, whether with a rock, Bain Bitschuchis, or a piece of glass, Bain Bikrumis Shokana, or a sharpened reed. So you see, you could use a reed. I'm going to pop up Simona de Agma, but as Sarah Papa says, because that Braisa is talking about specifically a particular kind of reed that grows by the water, which that doesn't produce splinters. When it's dry, Rashi explains, it just makes a very clean break. It makes a clean break, and there's no splinters that come off it, so therefore that would be fine to use for shchita. The statement of Rav Chista or the Braisa is saying that you shouldn't use it as talking other kinds of reeds where splinters come off it. Okay. And Brai said that we said before, Ve'en machatkin babas, so we said another thing you shouldn't do with a reed is to cut meat with it. However, the Gemara says, Rapapa machatach ba kirbe dogim de ziggy. Rapapa would use such a thing, a sharpened reed, to cut the intestines of fish. And therefore, and he didn't have a problem with that, there's no danger of splinters de ziggy because they're translucent. There you can see they're sort of see through, and therefore if there is a splinter in them, then you'll be able to see it. As opposed to meat, for example, you can't see through meat, so therefore there might be a splinter in it, and you might swallow it, and then it'll be harmful.
Wait, fish are see through?
Fish themselves are not see through, but the kishkis of them, the guts of the fish, if you're going to prepare them to eat, then those are they're not completely see through. They're not like glass, but it's called in English translucent. They're partially see through. That's enough to be able to see if there's something inside them. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rav Bar Avuna machatech ba'oifa. Similarly, Rav Bar Avuna would use a weed like that to cut bird meat. Not that bird meat is see-through, but apparently the idea is because it's softer, and therefore if there's a... So the point is, in other words, because there, the point is, you don't need to put as much pressure when you're cutting it. That's what Rashi explains. It's softer, and therefore, so you can, you don't have to put the pressure so much with the knife on it, and therefore, splinters are not going to come off in the first place. Okay. The last thing we said in the Braisa, in the statement of Rav Chisda, in the Braisa was Ve'in Mekan Chinba. We said you're not allowed to wipe with it because of the danger. So the question is, you have another reason why you can't anyway. Tibukle, Mishum de Omamau, you should have a different reason why you're not supposed to use such a thing for wiping. De Omamau, we learn in a Braisa, Am Kaneach, Bedovashal, Usha, let us buy a person who wipes with something that is flammable, Shinov Noishrois, his teeth will fall out. We don't mean the teeth in his mouth. Rashi explains we mean the muscles around that part of the body. They're shaped a little bit like teeth. That's, and therefore the Gemara calls them in some places shine karkashta. I mean the teeth of the rectum. So the point is, if a person wipes with that kind of thing, then it will cause those teeth, those muscles to loosen, and it'll become dangerous. Poets can point out that it's not a natural thing of that. It's not a natural cause of it. It's more of a supernatural thing. So in later times, people weren't careful with it. A number of things already that Amma mentions, even in his time before they had toilet paper, already people weren't careful, that Amma says, with a number of things that the Gemara says in different places not to wipe with. And in practice, you see that people do it, so you see there's no problem with it, because it was more of a segula thing. It was more of a supernatural thing for the same reason we use toilet paper, which is, of course, very flammable. In any case, the question is, the Gemara is saying, in no times where they were careful about that kind of thing, a reed is flammable, so you anyway shouldn't use it for wiping. Why are we saying dafka? Because it produces splinters. And the answer is, Amar Papa Kinuach Pimaka Kamin. You're right, we're not talking about wiping after going to the bathroom, we're talking about wiping the edges of a wound. You have a person has gotten injured, and you have a wound, and now you have to clean the edges of it in order to disinfect it, so you shouldn't use a reed like that, because then in the course of pressing on it, you might cause splinters which are going to get into the wound. But it's true, as far as wiping, anyway, it's perfectly true, you shouldn't use it for wiping after going to the bathroom, but that's for a different reason, because it's flammable, nothing to do with splinters.